We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
We had just kind of gone through this experience in March where our products really fit the market of people who are traveling to their office or flying on planes. And on March 13th, right, the world stopped doing both of those things. And so we had just gone through this experience of losing product market fit. And at the same time, we realized actually we gained product market fit because there's a whole world of market for masks now that exists.
Welcome to Retail Gets Real, where we talk with retail's most fascinating leaders about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. Many of us who work in corporate environments haven't touched our business attire in a year. As we work from home, stretchy pants have become the new work clothes. Today's guest is Brian Kennedy, Vice President of Operations at Ministry of Supply, an apparel brand that specializes in re-engineering business attire for the modern professional. We'll talk with Brian about how the brand shifted gears during the pandemic, what the last year has been like, and what's ahead for Ministry of Supply. But before we get to Brian, let me just welcome my colleague, my friend, and my co-host, and the producer of Retail Gets Real, Jen Overstreet. Hello, Jen.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me on this side of the microphone this time.
I can't call you the producer. I mean, isn't that what a producer does? That's the one that tells you when you messed up and you're going to have to do it again.
But, yeah.
And you cut people off. That's kind of director, producer, wife. But it's all about the same. But we're glad to have you as the co-host because we have Brian as our guest. Brian, welcome to Retail Gets Real.
Morning. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. And I know that Ministry of Supply has done a lot during this pandemic. And why do I know that? I went back and I looked at an email that I sent, I believe it was around April the 1st, a year ago. And I was watching, I believe it was CNBC or MSNBC, one of the two. And there was a fellow that was talking and he was out of Massachusetts. And the re-engineering of what they were doing as it related to 3D printing and some other stuff. And he was talking about the fact that he was wearing a Ministry of Supply, like cardigan or sweater. And he was talking about how Ministry of Supply was changing their lines and doing masks. And so we had talked to Ministry of Supply just before that. So I had to quick type off an email and congratulate you all for doing what you did in that short period of time and really making a difference in people's lives. But before we get to that, because that's what we really want to talk about, tell us a little bit about Brian Kennedy, your journey that got you to Ministry of Supply.
Yeah. So I'm Vice President of Operations. And for everyone who doesn't know Ministry of Supply, we're based out of Boston. Performance professional is kind of the category of clothing that we create. And Ministry of Supply was founded by a group of MIT engineers who all thought about clothing as a lens for problem solving. So they looked at the problems that we had with our day-to-day wear and attacked those problems with an engineering mindset. And so this kind of connected to two things that I've always been super passionate about and kind of my background. One is products and apparel. I grew up loving all sorts of products and dressing up in clothing. And I was huge into sneakers when I was younger. So products is something that always really resonated with me. And then the second half of that is engineering. So I come from a line of engineers. My grandfathers were draftsmen. My father was an engineer. My brother was an engineer. So, you know, when it came time for me to pick a career, I picked engineering. But I always had this passion for products and certain passions for apparel specifically. So after I got a mechanical engineering degree, I started working in medical device and doing a lot of stuff with hydrogels. And it's really interesting technology. And I loved it. And I loved the people that I worked with. But I always had in my, you know, we'd call it a side hustle now, but I always had these like little projects that I was working on. So whether it be screen printing tank tops or t-shirts, or I had a vintage shop online that I curated myself, but I was always trying to scratch this itch for apparel. And eventually, you know, kind of built up the confidence that I was going to switch to medical device, try to get into consumer goods and apparel. And I met up with the founding team at MIT. Yeah, it's just kind of the rest is history, but really lucky to have gotten involved. That was 6 years ago that I joined up with the team. And my role has really evolved, all things in production and supply chain, and now kind of moved into the wider operations of the business.
6 years. That's a lifetime in retail.
That's forever in startup years, too. That's like a decade or so.
That's pretty phenomenal. So tell us a little bit about Ministry of Supply, the product line. I've actually been to your store. I actually have Ministry of Supply shirts, so I should use that as kind of a, when I speak glowingly about the product, it's because, well, I know the product well. Tell us a little bit about, so it was MIT engineers, they all got together, and the whole 3D printing, tell us how that all evolved. Where did they got the idea to really move into clothing?
Yeah, so the founders met at MIT. I think that they both were, the team itself was all attacking problems of how can you engineer better clothes? And so one of our co-founders, he had been cutting out the soles of his Nike dry fit socks and stitching them onto the uppers of dress socks so he could have a comfortable sock that went into a dress shoe. Or one of our other co-founders, who was on the ran track at cross country, he was stitching in panels from his Nike dry fit shirts and putting those in the back of his dress shirts to make them more moisture wicking and breathable. So they had been hacking kind of solutions, and they decided that they were going to found a company based on, you know, building real solutions. And so the first product that we came out with was the Apollo dress shirt, which is an iteration of that we still sell today, but it's 19 times more breathable than a regular dress shirt. So really going down to the fiber level and making sure that we're designing products that solve a specific need, which is being really comfortable in your day-to-day life.
You guys are my gift-giving solution for my husband too, because especially like the Apollo dress shirts are, I'm always like a hero. Every Father's Day, every birthday, I know exactly what to get. I'm always a hero. So thank you.
They're fantastic. And whenever someone tries them on, they can feel the difference. The same thing with pants. I mean, everyone I think now has tried a pair of stretchy pants, but our kinetic pants are ultra high gauge in it. And when you try them on the first time, the first thing everyone does is squat down and just to feel really how stretchy and comfortable they are and while looking professional at the same time.
There is one position at Ministry of Supply. It's like customer, I can't remember. I got an email from them and I was like, that is a very unique title. And I can't remember what it is.
I think a customer experience manager, which is Tiffany, who she's the one that heads that up and makes sure everyone's taken care of. And one of the things that she does that we love is she'll do interviews with our customers, and we start our week. Every other week, we watch a video interview with one of our customers. And so just this morning, we sat down and we listened to a customer interview with a customer of ours named Corey. And he took us on a tour of his closet, and he talked to us about the clothes that he wears and how everything has shifted during the pandemic. Because it's, you know, it's very real. Everyone's started changing how they're dressing and how they're organizing their wardrobes, and the lines are getting blurred. So
tell us a little bit about what happened. So pandemic hits,
yep,
and you all get together and decide we're gonna make a difference.
Yeah.
How did that all transpire?
Yeah, so we had, March 13th, I think, was the day that it got really real for us. We had just renovated our Georgetown store near UNDC, and we were having an opening party that day. We had decided, you know, based on the news that was coming out, that we should cancel that party. So that was the first thing. That was March 13th for us. We canceled the opening party. The team that was down there flies home. And by the next week, we had closed the office and we had started working from home. And I went back and looked at my calendar. It was March 26th, so 13 days later, and we already had our go-no-go meeting for mask production on the calendar. And so within 13 days, and much credit to Gihan and the design side, they had designed a mask, they had done the research into filtration media, and also making sure that, you know, we were compliant regulatory-wise and we're making something that was going to be safe kind of as far as masks go. But we also, at the same time, we knew there was a shortage of masks here domestically, but there had been a big stockpile of some of the KN95 style masks that were in China. And so some of our partners and manufacturers overseas had reached out to us and they said, like, you know, if there's a shortage there, we can help you get some of these products in. And so at the same time as we were developing our own mask, which was a knit mask that was done on what we call our 3D print knit machine, and those were made domestically here, we're also, you know, bringing in and donating some masks of our own. And so we raised money to do that, which was fantastic. And I think it was like 85,000 masks that we ended up bringing in and donating to local areas that you know, had shortages. It was great, I think, for the team to be able to rally around and do something impactful so early on.
And I noticed that you guys kind of redesigned your masks sort of midway through to make improvements. And I mean, talk about a company that is uniquely positioned to do this sort of thing. It seems like, you know, a company of engineers, you guys solve problems. This is a major problem. Mm-hmm. tell us a little bit about that process. What was it like, you know, from an operational perspective, to first of all shift to making masks and then, you know, iterate on that product? And then, you know, when did you make the decision to change the clothing line, and how did that all roll out?
Yeah. So last year, I mean, it was a year of changes for sure. I think it was a year marked by, we talk about internally, but a culture of new ideas and just fostering new ideas and a culture of agility. A big part of us being able to make masks was some of the relationships that we had built and some of the technologies that we had kind of invested in and built a knowledge base in. And so one of them, as I mentioned, is what we call 3D print knit. It's basically a type of knitting where two knitting beds can cross over knitting and knit two panels at the same time. So you can knit really novel three-dimensional geometries. And we've used it in the past for sweaters, but it's really, really good for doing something smaller, like a glove where you have a lot of complicated knitting, or mask. We had just kind of gone through this experience in March where our products really fit the market of people who are traveling to their office or flying on planes. And on March 13th, right, the world stopped doing both of those things. And so we had just gone through this experience of losing product market fit. And at the same time, we realized actually we gained product market fit, because there's a whole world of market for masks now that exists. You know, I'm sure you remember how hard it was to get a mask. You know, everyone had someone in the neighborhood or a friend who was hand sewing them, but they were really hard to get. And we had a technology and invested in some partnerships with this technology that was really, really efficient at knitting small, complicated detail products, which is where the mask came from. So we went really quickly to market with the first iteration, and it was a mask that had a pocket for to hold the filter media. And you know, we did something that we always do, which is listen to our customers and listen to them and have conversations with them. And you know, it's a process we call quantified empathy, but really try to understand customer needs. And we found that, you know, there were some fit issues, there were some bulkiness issues, and something that we hadn't thought about was on the first iteration of our mask, it was really hard to talk through. I was very good at filtering, but it muffled the voice quite a bit. And that we hadn't envisioned a world where people would be talking and conversing through masks, because it was pretty early in the pandemic and they were much more about, it was much more like a rain jacket than a t-shirt. And you would only wear it for a specific instance, but then you'd take it off. So the next version of our mask, we knew we had to get it to be a little bit lighter to stand off the face and add a little bit of a gap to allow the mouth to move and to have not that the muffled voice. And fit issues was something that we heard from our customers. And so we wanted to address that and make it kind of a sleeker design. So we came through with the second iteration of the product, the 2.0. I think it was probably June or July when we launched the second one.
Are we going to go back? We know it's the new norm because here we sit behind our computers and the camera and we Zoom and you see me from, you know, my chest up. And are people... Do you think people are going to go back to the more professional, you know, the, I can't name the brands, but I mean, mm-hmm. some of the more, you know, I don't say stodgy brands, but I mean, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Our hypothesis is that people are going to want clothes that are comfortable. I think everyone's sat home long enough and realized how being comfortable is important. So we think comfort is going to rise up. We do think that people still will want to look put together and polished. You know, I think that, Bill, you wearing a dress shirt, even though you're working from home, is an indicator of that. And I think that people will want to look polished, but it might not be the same as before. You know, it might not be suits and ties, but we think that people will still want to look sharp. We think that people want to be comfortable. And we think there's a really big chance that people are going to dress for versatility and for travel and movement. So we're thinking that I think a hybrid work model is something that's very realistic for a lot of professions. And that's something that might stay with us for, you know, for decades, if not ever, right? And so if your workday now includes going to the office for the morning and coming home for the afternoon, and you're moving in the middle of the day, you're going to have to blend in. You don't want to change right when you get home. You want to wear stuff that's really versatile. So we're betting on versatility being really big. And then a trend that we've seen is active commuting. People who are biking and to work and kind of these new modes of commuting. That's really a place where our product shines, is that it lets you be active without, you know, sweating through your dress shirt or you know, ripping your trousers on a bicycle.
You know, I've just got to tell you, where I live in DC, where I haven't been in a long time, but on our community page, they're constantly posting pictures of our new Secretary of Transportation, Pete Buttigieg, biking to work every day, and his entourage, which is very, because the Department of Transportation is very close to where our condo is. So it's very, you're right. I mean, people,
if Mayor Pete is doing it, then the whole nation will soon follow.
I have no doubt. Sorry, Jen. I know you were about to ask something, but it just made me think. I mean, people are biking more. I've been on a bicycle more in the last year than I've been in the last 25. It's been pretty surprising.
Well, yeah. And with public transportation, that comfort level may not come back for a while get on a crowded subway train.
Yeah.
Brian, I was going to ask you, you know, living through this last year, it's kind of like, okay, we think things are getting better. Oh, wait, nope, new problem. New problem. From an engineer's perspective, this must kind of be sort of, I mean, I don't want to say fun because it's been a year, but I wonder what it's been like for you trying to solve all these new problems where at first you think, oh, this is a disaster, but wait, I see an opportunity. I think we can move in here. I wonder what the year has been like for you. If there have been any major challenges that stand out to you, are things that you worked through that you were just particularly proud or excited to find a solution?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. I think you're very much right. I think our team is a problem solvers by nature. And so when the world faces a whole bunch of new problems, you know, we get excited and get excited about all of it. So some of the really exciting ones are things that we're pretty proud of is finding ways to work with our existing inventory to make it a little bit more relevant for new ways that people were dressed. And so because a lot of our products are manufactured from the fiber level, they take 6 to 8 months to produce. And so before in March of last year, we've already written purchase orders that are landing in September and October. And we know the world is going to be a drastically different place. And we had just really gone after some investment on suiting and dress shirts, which, you know, I think we took the hint in March that those were going to be categories that were going to sink back down for a few months as people were home. So we took a look and we said, we want product that's going to be more, that's going to resonate with customers, that's going to answer some of the problems, the new problems that they're facing. So we looked to our product line for ways to modify existing inventory to make it more relevant and more pertinent to customers' lives. And so we did a couple of really fun things. We made one of our trousers, we did a modified fit and tapered it down, added a drawstring cord and made it a bit more of a casual trouser. That's something that we've been betting on happening in 2021, but we wanted to see if we could get something to market earlier. So we had a great partner in New Jersey and we sent some inventory and they worked with us to develop, you know, the modifications that would really change this into a new product, but based off of an existing one. But yeah, we looked at our existing inventory and found ways to use it. And we had some dress shirts that we turned into short sleeve dress shirts and changed the hemline. You know, there's a lot of modifications to make sure that the fit is what customers expect. But with the sleeves that we removed, we were able to make the pocket for the chest. And it really changed the silhouette of that. One particular project that was a fun one, we made denim, or chroma denim, as a denim that was designed to look brand new for as long as you would wear it, the life of the garment. It wouldn't fade, it would retain really deep, deep indigo color. And the design of it, the original intent was, you know, when you're in office, you want that crisp, new kind of, you know, that sleek, sharp denim look. But as customers were looking for, you know, for more casual options and everyone's working from home, we decided that we would send this denim out to some wash houses. And so we found some in LA and some in New York and basically sent them some pieces and you know, asked them to wash it and do stone washing and these different post-production treatments to the garments to see if we could get them to fade. So I sent out, you know, a few pairs to LA, a few pairs to New York. You know, three weeks later, they come in and I open the box and the denim all looks brand new. It hasn't faded at all. We had stone washed them, we had ball washed them, we did enzyme treatments. I couldn't get these pants to fade. But like, we finally did find one partner that was able to do some treatment. So there will be a new pair of chroma coming soon. But that was a fun one to see, is really test the product and try to turn it into something different for the customers.
We had the opportunity, we had a meeting out in California. We went to Levi's. We went to their factory, basically, where they had this machine that would cut the slice them or whatever that was. It was absolutely astounding to watch. So the engineering that goes behind making a pair of new jeans look old or to, you know, fashion it in the way that you know that people are going to want to buy it. It's not easy. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of try and try and try again until you get it right. So, you know, we have a lot of students, Brian, that listen to Retail Gets Real. And, you know, you've got a great story. And Ministry of Supply is a phenomenal business that is doing great work. If you were to be asked by a student, you know, I want to do what you have done. I want to be, you know, a part of something like you are at Ministry of Supply. How do I do that? What should I do? What advice would you give me? And what would that be, Brian?
It's a great question. I would say be persistent. You know, for me, I got my degree in engineering and I worked in medical device for quite a long time. And I decided that I wanted to switch industries. And when I sent over an application at the Ministry of Supply and didn't hear back. And so I reached out again and again and again. And I think it was honestly like the fourth or fifth time that I reached out. Eventually, I got in contact with the founders. And after that, we met in person and it ended up being a good fit. But just persistence. And I think prior to that, you know, making small changes and making small commitments to yourself as far as taking small steps to get where you want to go. We have something that we talk about internally is if you can improve yourself 1% every single day, you know, by the end of the year, I forget what the number is, but you're somewhat like 150% better than when you started the year. So just if you can do that 1% better every single day. And on the flip side, if you get 1% worse every single day, you know, that compounds the same way across the year. So doing small things. Taking a far enough look out where you kind of have a perspective on where you want to be, and then taking really small steps along the way to get there.
You know, one of the things I liked as you were telling, you know, about your journey is that it became very, very apparent that what you did was you pursued a passion. You had a passion for what you were doing, and you found a way to basically put that passion to work and doing something that you enjoy doing. Doing it for a company that you enjoy working for and people that you are working with. And I think it's really important too for people to understand that just because you are where you are doesn't mean that's where you will always have to be if you really are passionate about something else maybe that you might want to do, which isn't necessarily medical supplies. So I don't know if you've ever listened to one of our episodes before, but if you haven't, you don't know about it. If you have, you do, and you're prepared, but let's just hope that maybe you aren't. It's called Rapid Fire.
One of our favorite segments on Retail Gets Real is Rapid Fire, thanks to our sponsor, PwC.
Jen, start us off.
Your favorite vacation spot in a normal time?
Long Beach Island in New Jersey.
What was the last book that you read?
At Home by Bill Bryson.
Very good.
Early bird or night owl?
Early bird, always.
What is always in Brian Kennedy's refrigerator?
Iced coffee.
Iced coffee, good. You're in Boston, I would have just assumed beer, but I mean,
iced coffee, even when it's 20 degrees and I'm going to a hockey game, I'm drinking an iced coffee.
Very good.
That's a good habit, I like it. What's an office pet peeve you have that you haven't had to deal with lately?
Fish in the microwave. It's brutal.
Yeah, bad.
It's fair.
All right. What superpower would you like to have?
Time travel, if that works.
Time travel. That is definitely a superpower. Jen, close us out.
All right. You mentioned a little bit of your background, but what was your very first job?
Oh, it was amazing. I worked at a Play It Against Sports, which is a used sporting goods store in Latham, New York. I had the most fun. It was fantastic people that owned it. And I, like I said, I love gear. I've always loved gear and products, especially sporting goods stuff too. So to be able to work with and buy and sell all that stuff was so much fun.
And how old were you?
I think 16, 17.
Perfect job for a 16-year-old.
Excellent. Amazing. And you got paid for it. That's even the better part.
That's right.
So, Brian, thank you for doing Rapid Fire. And if you were to tell somebody that wanted to learn more about Ministry of Supply, where would you tell them to go?
Ministryofsupply.com. We have an Explore tab, I think, on the website. But that tells you a lot about what we're doing and kind of the new stuff that's going on. So definitely check us out there.
Brian, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. You've got a great story to tell. We love telling these stories. We are big fans of Ministry of Supply. This is the second RGR episode that we've done with folks from the company. I don't think it'll be our last. You all did phenomenal work. I have to be honest. I mean, we had done that first RGR recording in September, and then that was in April when I saw that clip on TV. It didn't surprise me, and I was very proud of not only the fact you all did what you did, but you were standing up for the people that you serve, which is what retailers do every single day. So thank you for your good work.
Thank you. Appreciate the kind words and appreciate you guys having us.
And Jen, thank you for being my co-host today. It's good to see you.
My pleasure. Thank you, Bill.
And thank you all for listening to another episode of Retail Gets Real. You can find more information about today's discussion and more at retailgetsreal.com. And please send us your feedback and episode ideas to podcast@nrf.com. During this time of COVID, we close once again by asking you to please be safe, stay well, and be with us again next time. Thanks for listening. Until then.